Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
In our New York office, a lot coming up on the podcast this week. Let's see if we can break down all the different things we'll be talking about and the people we'll be speaking with as well. So mostly, we're talking all things Taylor Swift this week on the podcast. Specifically, what should be the singles from Reputation, the new album, going forward. So there's been a couple so far, but we've been listening since the album came out. We have our thoughts, so we're going to try to plan the next year plus of your listening life. We're going to be record executives.
Ooh, I didn't realize it was going to be like a career day exercise.
You got the millions and millions of dollars riding on your decision.
Yeah, it's like one of those like bad sort of like Sims games, like record exec, you know, make it work.
So that's coming up. We'll get some industry thoughts from Eric Bradley, who's the assistant program director and music director of B96, Top 40, powerhouse radio station in Chicago. They've been playing multiple songs from the album, so we'll get his take on how the album sounds so far and what listeners are saying. And we'll look at how Reputation is shaping up for its chart debut on the Billboard 200. We're taping this on Tuesday afternoon, so we just found out the album has passed a million in sales through its first 4 days. So we'll talk about that. And we got a little bit different. We'll check in with Jim Asker, our Billboard senior chart manager based in Nashville. A couple songs. They're very timely for what's going on right now in pop culture. Breaking a Country by Keith Urban and Luke Bryan. So Jim's going to talk about that. And if that's not enough, Trevor, what are you flashing back to this week?
Ooh, how is that not enough? Ooh, that's solid, Gary.
In our third hour.
Yeah, goodness me. We'll be looking. We'll actually just be flashing back a couple years. So just to 2015, which, you know, believe it or not, that we've only had one Taylor Swift album in that time. So we're not going back very far. We're going back to an era of 1989. It's not going to be about Taylor Swift, though. It'll be about somebody else, another pop diva. And this sort of trend may be a too strong a word, but this coincidence or situation that keeps showing up, especially in a streaming world, that a lot of artists are taking advantage of. So I'll tease with that. But it's just a couple years out, so it definitely is still affecting the music that you hear today.
All right, that's all on the way. Right now, let's recap this week's top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Number 10.
Milan's to Mexico.
¿Y dónde está mi gente? Me fue a bouger la tête. ¿Y dónde está mi gente? Say, yeah, yeah, yeah.
1, 2, 3,
let's go.
Number 9.
Love me now, love me now. House on you, I'm lucky now, lucky now, lucky now. You gotta tell me if you love me or not, love me or not, love me or not.
Sitting in the dark with you between my arms, barefoot on the grass, listening to our
bass. Number 7.
Just for kicks, yeah, your lover's an abyss for my heart to eclipse now. Might be over now, but I feel.
Number 6.
my life ain't mine. I finally wanna be alive.
Number five. Number four.
Count the list, I love you. Baby, we don't stand a chance. It's sad, but it's true. I'm way too good at goodbye.
I'm way too good at goodbye.
Number three.
I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now speak, that means I don't fuck with you. I'm a boss who a worker.
Number two. Number one.
I feel just like a rock star. All my brothers got that gas and they always be smoking like a rock star. Fucking with me, call up on the Uzi and show up, man, them the shot toss.
All right, and if you are a Dave Chappelle fan, this one is going to be for you because this is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th week at number one for Rockstar, Post Malone, and 21 Savage. Gary is not a Dave Chappelle fan. I can tell by the look on his face. Dave Chappelle and Gary did not go way back in 2005. If you did know the reference, though, shout out to you. But in any case, Post Malone, yes, holding down the number one spot once again with 21 Savage. Holding off Havana, Camila Cabello at number two for a second week. And both of these songs, you know, as they sort of, it seems like as their labels and management try to figure out the number one situation and how that may play out, there's a couple factors going in the past couple of days that have made this race a little more interesting in the next couple of weeks. We'll start off with Camila for her efforts to get to number one for the first time in her entire career. We saw her this past week on Sunday at the MTV EMAs over in Europe. So it'll be interesting to see how that momentum translates onto the American charts. I mean, obviously, it's not like the VMAs where it's the biggest show and it has nationwide attention, but of course, the Camila fans will be out there in full force watching. And I mean, with some A-list talent, you'd be surprised. I mean, Eminem was there, and in a social media world, a lot of those award show performances get around much easier than they did beforehand. Absolutely. So we'll see that, as well as the second factor going for Camila as she put out a new remix of the song with Daddy Yankee, who actually has his part in Spanish. So it makes a new Spanglish version of Havana that came out on Sunday. So that's midweek through the tracking week that we have here for sales and streams. So it'll be interesting to see how much that can play into the race in next week, but definitely a new plan out there as well. And on top of that, something we've seen for a while now, maybe about 12, 18 months, both Rockstar Havana now on sale. Right. 69 cents on iTunes. So trying to get those people who may not want to spend a whole dollar to spend at least 80 cents and help out. Seems like over the past couple of days, Camila's been winning that race. The song has been very close, if not number one on iTunes for virtually the entire week. So it looks like the sales race is going to shift in her favor. And we'll see if the other factors can as well.
Yeah, and she's already passed Post Malone Havana's over Rockstar at radio. So on the radio songs chart, Havana went 17-9 this week. Rockstar went 14-10. So they both hit the top 10, but Havana is now higher. So it's overtaken in airplay. We'll see how the sales battle goes. Camila, actually, just before we taped this podcast, she was on Twitter kind of prodding the fans to help her get to number one. So even she herself, she's involved.
It seems interesting. And the Post Malone streams have been coming down a little bit for the past couple of weeks. I know one thing that this was some chart watchers, some chart fans out there keep noting is there is no music video for the song yet, so there's still that avenue of streams coming. But, I mean, at this point, it's Tuesday, and the video's not out. And, of course, Post Malone will have until Thursday for this week. So if he's going to drop it, I hope it's a banger that sets the world on fire. Or if not, if he can hold off for another week, maybe drop the video then. I mean, I'm sure both camps and both labels are sitting over computers, pouring over models, trying to figure out what's the right time to strike.
Yeah, and the point difference between the two is actually half this week what it was the week before. So Rockstar was down barely about 1% in overall points. Havana was up 10%. So it's closing the gap. You know, anything can happen week to week, but at least momentum-wise, at the moment, Havana is trending in the right way. So we'll see what happens. But we could have a really close battle for number one next week, the way it's looking, and it's possible.
You know, the last time we talked about a battle for number one, I think most people were mentioning when it was Taylor versus Cardi back a couple months ago at this point. And then remember how Post Malone kind of came out of nowhere and people were saying, well, maybe, oh, could this do it? Could this do it? It seems like, you know, on paper, we kind of have one of those scenarios again where people say, wait a minute, there's this huge new song out. Could this throw the race, you know, entirely for a loop? And of course, I'm talking about the Eminem and Beyonce song "Walk on Water" that we heard debuted last Friday.
I walk on water, but I know Jesus. I walk on water, but only when it freezes.
Why? Our expectations so high. Is it the bar I set? My arms I stretch, but I can't reach.
We had seen that the teaser a couple days, like the title "Walk on Water" was in quotes, but I mean, I don't think anyone quite knew when it was coming out, and I don't think anybody knew that Beyonce was going to be on it. So a superstar collaboration. Is that going to be enough to throw Post Malone and Camila for a loop next week?
From what we know so far, sales-wise, at least, it could sell 50,000 to 60,000, which could make it possibly number one in sales for the week. But it really comes down to what the streaming will be, the airplay. It's just going to radio now. So the airplay won't be anywhere near what Rockstar and Havana have. But it should have a big debut. We'll get more numbers later in the week, but it really seems to be dividing people. Even you and me, we're on different sides of this.
For sure. Let me throw out one last little factual note for people who are trying to figure what that means. If it sells about 60,000 copies, let's give it on the upper bound of that. This past week, Taylor Swift's "Call It What You Want" sold close to 70,000 copies.
Right.
Was the best-selling song of the week as well, but its Hot 100 debut was at number 27,
and that had about 10 million in streams.
Right.
So if it sells that much, and say it gets 10 million in streams,
it would need to do some heavy lifting on the streaming, and certainly on the airplay side.
Right. So it could be it could be a stretch from what we know now to even consider it for number one. Never mind top five or top 10. But this is really
kind of hate to poke a hole in those dreams so early.
Yeah.
But
it's such a polarizing set. I feel like I put it out there just among the chart department. We were all listening when it first came out, and I jumped on it. I owned it. I said, I think this is a really – I thought it was good because it has a good hook. It's got Beyonce. It's so different, but I'm also the AC guy, so I'm appreciating that Eminem is showing this totally different side. And maybe you and maybe other people were wondering, has Eminem completely gone soft on us? What's going on here?
I don't.
You're just shaking your head.
I am. I just, even just hearing you rehash those thoughts. No, Gary. This is no.
I'm in the minority with everyone else who might make it the number one selling song of the week.
I know a lot about minorities. I'm just saying. But this song to me, it's an interesting song, I think, for a lot of people in particular, because I think it's one of those songs where you saw the names and you expect, and unfortunately, better for us, that gives you an impression. You know, it's got to be this iconic collaboration. I mean, we're talking Eminem and Beyonce. For anyone who grew up in the 2000s, I mean, even by Billboard standards, Eminem was the top artist of the 2000s. Beyonce was the top female artist. So this is one of those, you know, superstar A++++++ collaborations.
It's like One Sweet Day.
Sure. And the thing about it is, For people who have two people who have so much energy, Beyonce is, I mean, especially when she performs, has a huge amount of energy. Right. We know Eminem can just go kind of wild and just pour so much rage and passion into those songs. That's where it felt flat for me. And I know that Beyonce, I mean, there's not a whole lot of Beyonce in the song, and it's definitely more of her like gospel kind of R&B hook more than necessarily like a pop banger.
Right.
And I guess just I was hoping for something a little more 03 Bonnie and Clyde, a little more, you know, M&B here to run the game. And it's not that, you know. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily bad.
Yeah, if anything, it reminds me kind of Kesha Praying, which has become such a big hit despite tempo. So maybe, oddly enough, it's been proven that a song with so little tempo like this Beyonce Eminem song can be a pop hit. Maybe it's just going to wind up being more of kind of an introductory track that ushers in the album, and then it's got to be, I really couldn't be anything with less tempo coming after this, but they are going to radio with it, so we'll see.
Yeah, and to that point about Kesha, and I guess because Kesha did a song with Macklemore earlier this year, a lot of people really making that link between Eminem and Macklemore like never before. Obviously, they both get it because they're both white rappers, and they are by far probably the two biggest white rappers we've seen in ever. But in terms of now, of messaging and delivery, because if you haven't heard the song, you know, it's a much more introspective, self-analytical Eminem, which has always been there in his catalog. Certainly, I mean, he's used his own life and his struggles with fame and his ups and downs. That's all been sprinkled into the message, but now it's on full force display, kind of like never before. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting choice. I don't know. I mean, I do appreciate what the song means. I do appreciate that the two artists got together. I guess just it's hard for me to get over, like, when I pressed play, I thought it was going to be one thing, and I'm still. It's like somehow every time I press play on that song, I think to myself, like, well, maybe this will be the time where it's just, you know, I walk on water. Like, I'm ready to be, you know, Instagram captioning it and screaming at the top of my lungs and blaring it from the car.
Anytime I see something on the 86 Red Sox, I always assume Bill Buckner's gonna catch the ball and they're gonna get out of it. It never changes.
Just one time, you just kind of hope you could win.
All right, so well, we'll see. It'll be some kind of a hit. It'll debut next week, so we'll look at that. We'll see where it goes going forward. Other thing this week, not on the Hot 100 yet, but over on the Hot Country Songs chart, two songs debut. Give a little listen to each one. It's Keith Urban, Female, and Luke Bryan. Most People Are Good.
Sister, shoulder, daughter, lover, healer, broken halo, mother nature, fire, suit of armor, soul survivor, holy water, secret keeper, fortune teller, Virgin Mary, scarlet letter, technicolor, river wild, baby girl, woman child, female. I believe most people are good, and most mamas ought to qualify for sainthood. I believe most Friday nights look better under neon or stadium lights. I believe you love who you love, ain't nothing you should ever be ashamed of. I believe this world ain't half as bad as it looks. I believe most people are good.
All right, so new music from Keith Urban and Luke Bryan. We just wanted to dig a little bit deeper into this because you heard some of those lyrics. These are directly related to what's going on right now in just overall conversation in pop culture right now. So both of those songs this week are new on Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart. I wanted to talk to Jim Asker in Nashville, our senior chart manager who oversees all our country charts, get his take about all this. So here is Jim Asker on the Billboard Chart Beat podcast with us.
Somebody say somebody hits like a girl. How does that hit you? Is that such a bad thing?
Jim Asker in Nashville, our Nashville correspondent, our senior chart manager based in Nashville. Jim, thanks for coming on the podcast. So Keith Urban, Luke Bryan, new songs, Keith Urban's Female and Luke Bryan's Most People Are Good. They both debut on Billboard's Hot Country Songs chart this week. And they just kind of stood out to us that country is so often a song subject. It's almost been kind of become stereotypical in this point, some of the bro country themes. But these two songs are not so much that they're even so much about what's actually going on in culture right now, but that they're so timely. It feels like, I think you're going to tell me, that Female was even written really, really recently with all the allegations going around it. It feels like it literally was just created, this song.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me, Trevor and Gary. And, you know, I was really pleased to hear these two songs. Keith Urban got a tremendous response when he did it at the Country Music Association Awards. The Luke Bryan is, like you said, Gary, it's just so different for him. And Female is different for Keith too, and he's even got Nicole singing background vocals on it. I'm really happy to see country music taking this slight turn It's not, you know, they're not political songs. They're upbeat, but they are definitely, I think, in response to what has been going on in our world. The Keith song wasn't written by him, but he said he didn't even know it was written right after the Weinstein news came out by the three writers who wrote it in response to that. But then he said it fits perfectly, and he was glad to hear that. Yeah, I mean, good for Nashville, right?
Well, it feels like country has been... some of the lyrics sometimes tie to the news, but it feels like when that happens with country, it's generally more of a straight-up patriotic angle. You think something like Alan Jackson, Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning, or some of the Toby Keith songs. So this isn't that. This is Keith and Luke getting into all the sexual allegations that they're going on. And Luke Bryan, yeah. I know his song is I guess it's probably more... just about some of the overall tragedies, all the shootings that have been going on. Most people are good, just kind of overall. But even that song, I thought it was interesting for a country song, even in 2017, the lyric that stands out is when he's singing about, I believe you should love who you love. And you don't always hear that
right.
in country. A little bit of an LGBTQ angle to that song.
Yeah, you know, Gary, you know, it doesn't seem all that long ago to me, but I guess it was a long time ago. Bush 41, George H. Bush, was at a CMA Awards. I remember when I was in radio one time. And, you know, Reba McEntire said, "Can I call you buddy?" And it was almost like we were a wing of the Republican Party at the time. And a lot of the I think we're in the middle now. It's kind of purple. But it's great to see that it's becoming a melting pot and completely different than how a lot of people still perceive us. Not us. I mean, the country genre. At the CMA Awards, I think, you know, aside from SNL and shows like that, it was the first major show that had almost the entire ongoing theme throughout the show of being positive, uplifting, you know, saluting the people, the victims from the recent shootings. And, you know, we started out with the CMA saying anybody who asked questions about the Las Vegas shootings at the press conference would be escorted out. And then they changed really quick and almost did a 180 in what the show came out to be. So I think that it's all positive. And I was really happy to see the CMA Awards take on that tone and just be really uplifting. I don't know if you saw the Carrie Underwood performance in the arena. It was just, you could hear a pin drop while she was singing. And it's a traditional hymn, by the way. It's on Reba McEntire's Back to God album, but it's an old traditional hymn. And then they showed the photos of all the victims from the massacre in Las Vegas, which is just a really nice tribute. And then, you know, the Osborne Brothers video won for video of the year. You know, that song is actually lampooning Trump in the video and takes a political bent. So there was that as well. And I know that one of the Osbournes backstage said something about how, you know, a lot of artists are afraid to be political. But when you go back to country music's roots, you know, people like Haggard and Willie Nelson, always standing up for the working people. And country music really has those bottom-up roots if you go back to where it all started. So, you know, it's kind of all a cycle, I guess, from God Bless the USA to this.
I mean, you said the reception in the room, which I know can sometimes be a very different reception than maybe the public at large. What do you think, you know, a few days out after the moment's kind of passed, how are people responding to these songs on a larger scale?
Just running into people that I know in coffee shops, on the street, et cetera, the response has been overwhelmingly positive about the show itself. And more than reacting to a political bet, either left or right, people were just more just happy that it took on this positive note throughout the show and a salute to everything that the victims, and trying to be an uplifting message throughout the show. I think is the best way to describe it, and a uniting message. So everybody I talk to has been really, and these are people out of the industry, not industry insiders either, just normal folks, country music fans, who are really happy about the show.
One last question, I guess, about in particular about the two songs we talked about. Do you think there is any pressure or what the inside conversations might be at the label to make this a hit? I mean, if this song, you know, if Keith Urban's song is not a hit, I'm sure a lot of people are going to point to that as, you know, well, it was the subject matter. We shouldn't talk about these kind of things, you know. This is why you don't do political songs. I mean, do you think that that puts an extra pressure on him to deliver, or do you think it kind of stands on his own?
You know what, Trevor? That's a really good point. I have not had any conversation with people on the inside just yet, but that's a really good point. And we shall see. Female and the Luke Bryan song are both off to good starts, great starts. And from the Keith song debuting on top of country digital song sales, first time he's ever debuted at number one, I think that's proof that the fans like it. So, you know, that whether you're looking at the radio platform or streaming or sales, I mean, it's all driven by consumption and people that are out there listening to it. So I'm hoping that it's embraced so much by the public that it kind of has to drive it up, even on the radio airplay chart, you know, with programmers at the helm. But we shall see. I mean, that's a really good point, Trevor.
Yeah, and I think to the point you just made about fans, I mean, this is one of those songs where, you know, a lot of country singles may not get the same sort of widespread coverage that this did. Obviously, it had the award show, but even some of the conversation, I don't want to say necessarily controversy, but conversation around the song and its place in larger pop culture about what's going on. I mean, one of the nice things is it could, you know, invite a new sort of lane of people who may not pay attention to Keith Urban necessarily or pay attention to country music, but, you know, if they rally around the message of the song, this could open it to a lot more pop fans or, you know, just fans of not country traditionally. So could be a thing to watch out for as well.
Yeah, good point. I'm hoping that, you know, the more people that are brought under the tent, the better. And the more opinions from people outside of the format who don't understand the genre, who still think it's all God Bless the USA, and the more to the right Toby Keith songs, et cetera.
Put a boot in your ass.
We'll have their minds changed by this, you know.
I feel like the Luke Bryan, I know it's not an official radio single yet, Light It Up is still the single, but it'd be kind of cool if this became a big radio hit, something a little bit more serious for Luke. I feel like it really could be kind of just a good feel-good anthem for AC, for other formats. Just feels like this could be the song that could do it for.
Gary, you know Top 40 so well. Could a song like that cross over onto the pop charts?
Yeah, the outlier this year was Sam Hunt, and that was Body Like a Backroad, which was just kind of a fun, upbeat song. So, you know, in the past, I Hope You Dance, Leanne Womack was a hit, but, you know, we're talking like 17, 18 years ago at this point. So that'd be a real test. I don't know that it would work at pop radio. I could totally see it being a hit for adult radio, but I just think it'd be a great message to be hearing on country radio, if nowhere else, from Luke.
Yeah, I hope so. I have not talked to people at Capitol Records, his label, to find out if that's the next single. They don't usually like to give that away until the current one makes its way up the chart. But hopefully this had a good enough of a splash to become the next single for him. You know, the album's coming out in a few weeks, and it should have a good debut. And hopefully this song will continue to be consumed out there, so maybe push it to be a single.
Right. Anyway, it's a serious song, but it's an upbeat song at the same time, so it's kind of the right mix lyrically. Yeah.
And it's different. I mean, Light It Up is a traditional Luke Bryan, happy, you know, his, you know, right in his mix of what he normally does. So this would be a little bit different for him and maybe a good change-up after the current single is finished up the charts.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
All right, thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
Knew he was a killer first time that I saw him. Wonder how many girls he had left and left haunted. But if he's a ghost, then I can be a phantom holding him for ransom.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And as we make our way from Nashville back to New York, we're going to follow the path of somebody else who took that Nashville to New York leap. Who else but the one and only Taylor Allison Swift?
Well, this is the one place anywhere on the internet that you're going to get a take on Reputation. Nobody's talking about it, right?
Yeah,
do something different.
It's odd how it became, you know, such a here and there album.
All right, so everyone's giving their take, but we wanted to not only do that, but Billboard wise, chart wise, we like to look at what could be on the charts going forward. So we thought we'd look specifically. What might the singles be from Reputation going forward? So we've listened. I've got my notes, Trevor. I think you have yours. Overall, before we even do that, just overall, what's your take on the album so far? Just overall thought.
I'll try and wrap this up kind of succinctly because it feels like one of those things you can, if you don't watch out, you can have an entire, you know, session on. In particular, I like the album. I do. And I gave into the general pop culture notion that this was going to be like the death knell of Taylor Swift. And so I kind of went into it sort of expecting to hate it, you know. Where am I going to what is the moment I'm going to say, ooh, this is it, you know, how are you going to bounce back from this? And I say that as a Taylor Swift fan, but I guess I just sort of gave into the, you know, I mean, the zeitgeist of the past couple years. And no, she hasn't been perfect and yada yada. But in any case, in terms of the album itself, I think I agree with a lot of people that it was sort of, I mean, I hate to say a bait and switch, but maybe it was. I mean, the singles don't really reflect the album as a whole, I think. I mean, there were four songs out there, and certainly the first two that she put out, Look What You Made Me Do, Ready For It, not the vibe and the attitude of the album overall that I was expecting. It's much more in a call it what you want kind of sense. Yes. And I think if I had to tell people what from 1989 to expect going to this album, I would personally say this album is like Wildest Dreams sort of taken into an entire album.
Yeah, Wildest Dreams with just more trap and a little bit more tempo.
For sure. But I think like the middle two-thirds of the album, I mean, the end of it certainly a lot more dreamy, a little more whimsical than I thought it was going to be. Certainly not the up-tempo sort of attitude that I think the first couple singles gave off.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you on a lot of that. Same kind of thing. I thought, is it going to be a lot of Look What You Made Me Do? Is it going to be just some really different sounds that we've never heard from her? And that really is the one outlier, I think, on the album. There are 15 songs, and if anything that's interesting, there is a lot of the songs, I don't want to say blend together, because that's it sounds almost like...
it sounds dismissive,
like
I guess.
A bad thing, but there is a real sound that carries through the whole album, and it's just sort of this mid-tempo, as you said, dreamy, kind of ethereal, slightly EDM-influenced pop. So if you like that sound, you're probably going to like the whole thing. It doesn't have as much, I guess, variety as maybe 1989 in terms of its overall production.
Yeah, it's certainly not as much forward sort of out there energy.
It is a little low key.
I think personally, for sure.
And you know, for people, one of the big narratives too that always comes up is people want the old Taylor. She made it very clear that the old Taylor's dead. But the singer-songwriter Taylor, there's one song that really sounds like something she might have done 10 years ago, New Year's Day, the closing song. But you know, I think about that, and then I think of, not to compare Taylor to someone like the Beatles, but you think of the Beatles in 6 years, how they went from She Loves You to I'm the Walrus and some of the things that they did. And I feel like Madonna, same kind of thing. You go from some of her earliest hits to stuff like Erotica. Some of the biggest artists of all time, they're the creative minds. They seems like they get a little bored with one sound and they try a lot of different things. So I don't think you can ever really get upset with an artist for following the changes that they hear in their head for where their music is going. I think if anything, you judge the songwriting. Are the hooks still there? Is the songwriting is good? The production's going to change with artists. So, you know, this is where she's going. People are going to respond. They're going to like it. And as we said, a million sold in the first 4 days. And some of it's just anticipation. You don't necessarily listen to the whole thing first. But, you know, that's what artists do.
Her last album was 1989, which we saw was a massive commercial success. Also a huge critical favorite, but it really broadened the fan base, I think, in a way that none of her four other albums before that could do, because they were all, you know, sort of country adjacent. This one kind of opened the doors. And this one, you know, is much more, I mean, yeah, like there's definitely more trap. I mean, I guess when a lot of people noted last year or those rumors that she was going to work with Drake, and we saw also the Apple Music ads where Drake and Taylor were both in them at certain points. And I think he was listening to like one of her songs, in one of the ads. So there's a lot of, you know, Taylor Drake cross collaboration there. Right. And I think she was listening to Jumpman or whatever. And so this to me sounds like it could be a Drake Taylor kind of album. Like, I'm surprised in a way he didn't pop up on something, but it's got that sort of moody, you know, kind of just, this is what I'm feeling right now kind of thing.
You know, the one thing I think still is a point when Better Man by a Little Big Town won for Song of the Year at the CMAs, how it, that side of Taylor, the country side, but not even just the sound or the production, that it's still there. I think lyrically, you know, a lot of fans who grew up with Taylor really like that very intimate style she had, where she could really paint a picture of a relationship, which I kind of hear it in a different way. I feel like her writing style is just a little bit different. It's still descriptive. There's still a lot of turns of phrases that are really interesting. But something like the song I always go back to with Taylor that I think has just pointed out her skill as a songwriter is The Best Day. Remember that song?
This is from Fearless, right?
I'm 13 now.
So the lyric about kids have made fun of her in school. She's driving with her mom and we're going to window shop until I've forgotten all their names. And she's wondering who she's going to sit with at school now, who she'll be friends with. But her mom is making her feel better for now. It's just there's a lot of emotion that she describes in that. And I think that's always been her charm. And it gets a little bit lost maybe under heavier production. It's kind of hard to have that same lyrical connection when the music is so much more produced. But yeah, I think that's what always drew people in. And it was very, this could happen to me. It doesn't get any more. Anyone can picture themselves at school like that. It's a little different when the lyrics are more, I've been fighting with Kanye for 3 years and now I'm going to say what I think about it. It just isn't as relatable. It just can't be.
Can we also... I mean, you made a lot of great points there, but I do want to pick up on that Kanye thing. Can we just pause and give a shout out to, I mean, anybody who would have had the foresight, that moment that you thought was going to be like a one-off, one-week kind of pop culture thing, it's amazing how that has colored both of their lives for almost a decade. I mean, I almost can't wait to read all the hot takes in, you know, 2019 when it's the 10-year anniversary, because that moment has overshadowed, I mean, that not overshadowed their entire careers, but that moment has... I mean, it is a pivotal part of both of their developments as artists. And it just, who would have guessed, you know?
Well, she says in the album, one of the lyrics is, I don't like drama. Drama likes me. I'm paraphrasing.
Drama loves her. It doesn't like her. It loves her.
All right. Well, let's just, I'd rather just focus on the music because, again, you could get lost just going into
I think we did get lost.
But let's look ahead. So Look What You Made Me Do, first single. I think we said it's really not fully representative of what the whole album sounds like. Ready For It,
half and half. I feel like when you get to the chorus, it's just this big pure pop chorus blooms, and that's kind of more the sound of the album. So that's the second radio single. Who's going first? Who's picking the third single first?
You got to go.
I'm going. I keep going back. I feel like there are three songs that could be third, fourth, or fifth, and I'm putting Gorgeous third.
You're so gorgeous. I can't say anything to your face. 'Cause look at your face. And I'm so furious at you for making me feel this way. But what can I say? You're gorgeous. You should take it as a compliment that I'm talking to everyone here but you.
And I kind of hate in some ways to pick a song that we knew before the album was out, because it feels like maybe there's a bias that I know it more. But I just keep coming back to it sounds the most radio ready to me, and it could be a hit in the winter. So, yeah, that's what I'm going with. That's what I'm going with third.
You know, Gary, I think I agree with that. I think I was trying to decide what I wanted to be a pick. I picked it, I think. I mean, the wintertime thing, I definitely agree, but I also just personally – or sort of strategically was thinking your first two songs are two sort of up-tempo sort of big bombastic songs. And I think, I mean, you know, it's that old trick of you give them sort of one thing and then you give them the complete opposite to show the range of the album. And I was thinking, I think Gorgeous is probably still sonically attractive enough to where you listen to it, because I do agree that there's some songs, you know, what will be probably quote unquote the filler cuts later in the album that seemed to me a little too sleepy to put on radio. They're not, I mean, they're good songs, but it's one of those things where it's not going to necessarily attract me if I'm not listening, you know, or paying attention to it. So I think Gorgeous strikes that balance well enough. And I would agree. I think that would be a good kind of wintertime song. And people already kind of know it, which always kind of helps. But yeah.
Plus two lyrics to shout out. One, it gets extra points for me because she mentions going home to your cats.
Yeah. I don't know if maybe the radio edit can cut that part, but at least she'll like laugh at herself for being such an old grandma nerd about that.
For being a cat lady. The other line I just thought is we were talking about lyrics that anyone can relate to. I thought this line actually really does. The line where she says, "You should take it as a compliment that I'm talking to everyone else."
Well, the lyric is you should take it as a compliment. I'm talking to everybody but you.
Right. So it's just sort of an interesting, like we were saying about the best day, how She watches the way people feel, the way people interact. And I thought that's kind of a very insightful line about how sometimes when you like someone, they're the last person you want to talk to. You'll talk to anyone else because you don't want it to go bad. So I just thought that's kind of...
Yeah, nervy, flirty Taylor for sure.
Yeah. So all right, so we're going with Gorgeous third. You go next. What's our fourth single?
All right. If we're going to play sort of the calendar game, if we are doing Gorgeous for the winter, I think the springtime song. I personally,
I wanna be your end game. I wanna be your first string. I wanna be your A team. I wanna be your end game. End game. Big reputation. Big reputation. Oh, you and me, we got big reputations. And you heard about me.
Ooh. I'd be quite surprised if Endgame were not a single at some point. I think just whether it's the star power, I mean, we don't really even get that many Taylor Swift collaborations, period, and especially on her own albums. So I think that could be that's a good, like, get you outside sort of. I think of, like, if I were back in college, like, you know, when springtime comes around, people starting to get back out and play sports again and just kind of, you know, want something to jam to on the lawn. And I think in particular, I mean, that chant of, like, you know, big reputation, you know, something, I don't know, there's something, yeah, something kind of like collegiate about it. And I feel like that would do well at that point in time in the year.
Well, we haven't compared notes, but I had that as fourth too. And part of me,
oh,
thinks,
wow.
Part of me thinks that should be the third single, because it feels like maybe the most buzz is about that song because of Future, because of Ed Sheeran rapping. Maybe that needs to be next.
If it gets lost in the Christmas shuffle, like, yeah. I still feel like that's the right time for that.
I just keep going back to Gorgeous. It has a more obvious hook, so that's what I'm thinking. You go with that third, fifth. See if we're 5 for 5 here. And I thought of maybe this should be third.
Well, I guess we're 2 for 2 technically, like by definition.
That's true. Yeah, we got the first two right. I feel like this could be third or fifth or maybe fourth. And I think it's probably the catchiest song all out on the album, Getaway Car.
Old-fashioned, we were cursed. We never had a shotgun shot in the dark. You were trying.
Getaway Car. I had four songs written down, and one of them was Gorgeous, one of them was Endgame, and there's two others, and one of them is Getaway Car.
Yeah.
I every time I listen to it though, it feels like, because I know people were saying out there they thought it should have been the first single off the album.
I was thinking that too as I've listened now, and it might have been a whole different story about this album. She came up with this great catchy pop song, and not something as polarizing as Look What You Made Me Do. It might be totally different thinking.
I still feel like, I don't know if I think Getaway Car should have been the first single though. There's something about it that feels, it's hard for me to say because I don't hear it as necessarily a genius pop radio like instant hook. I think it's a great song, but part of me feels like I just don't know if it to I mean, because you know, you take a song, obviously you're taking it out of its like placement on the album and sort of throwing it out in the void on its own,
right?
And I know people like the song and appreciate it. I think it's a good song. I wonder if it's like maybe a little too, and I hate to not give pop radio fans credit, if it's a little too almost narrative-y for a pop radio song. Like
I don't think it's that. I think the only thing that holds me back is, and this is not anything against Jack Antonoff, but he co-wrote Greenlight by Lord.
Correct.
And kind of a simile, this huge pop chorus. I thought that was going to be one of the biggest hits of 2017, and it didn't connect at top 40. So I wonder if, as much as critic-wise, that pure pop sound that he does, it seems to be loved by so many people, it hasn't always worked. Bleachers haven't crossed over to pop radio, so maybe,
I mean, if you want,
maybe these songs don't work for radio. I don't know.
Well, if you want to look back even in the Taylor catalog, and you know, you can give the asterisk that it was the sixth single, and maybe people get tired of the sixth single, but Out of the Woods was right. The sixth song from 1989.
Right.
And that was the first one, I mean, to miss the top 10 on the Hot 100. It really didn't even come close at all.
Right.
So, I mean, again, I'll give it the asterisk of six single fatigue, but
yeah, but I'll say time. This song has a much better hook than Out of the Woods. Out of the Woods is more of a groove. This the chorus is the payoff.
For sure. And yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how people respond to sort of Sneaky Taylor. For me, it still seems a little too, I don't know, it seems a little too narrative for it's not the kind of song I feel like you can like just jump in at any point and like jump right in. It's a song that you like need to hear from start to finish.
I've just been hearing the hook in my head, so I gotta dig into the lyrics more. I mean, I'm just musically all over that one. And it kind of reminds me in some ways of the style from 1989, just the one that kind of had, I think in some ways, the most all-out hooky pop chorus. So it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, but still with a little bit of, a little spice in it, I guess you could say, for sure.
I'm shaking my head and locking the gates. This is why we can't have nice.
The other one I wanted to point out, I guess, was I'm trying to think of where I think This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things should exist, because I think, I mean, if it's the older, better sister of Look What You Made Me Do, which I completely agree with a lot of those takes, that this is the better diss song to All the Friends. But again, I wonder if it's a little too
personal. Sixth. I had that as sixth, and it's the one I think I keep going back to the most today, just because it's fun. It's a little different. It kind of breaks up the more low-key sound of the album. It's kind of Bad Blood and some of the cheerleadery kind of chant about it.
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
Fun.
I mean, that's a good point of Bad Blood work, because my thing I was worried about is like, well, this is a little too, you know, I mean, you cannot separate this song from the narrative, the way,
right.
I mean, I feel like this is not a song that most people can sit there and say, you know, oh, I know what it's like to do, you know, for this to happen to me. But I mean, I guess you're right. If bad blood worked and no one's been better at revenge in the past decade than Taylor Swift. So yeah. maybe there's something.
One review pointed out, why does it have an Andy vibe to it? It kind of sounds a little bit like Hard Knock Life. Yeah, a little bit in the production.
Well, maybe Jay-Z will grab onto it and make it a hit too.
So yeah, all right. So we've got that's boring. We've got the same.
I know. I kind of want more of a fight.
Call it what you want. I still feel like that could be a single. Yeah, she's gone. She's got seven. It's got a good hook. A Dress could be the I Don't Want to Live Forever type single.
Dress, yeah. But there's also like I saw it's one of those things where like there always are some of those Taylor cuts that are good cuts that just always end up on the album, and I always feel like they never put out all the good songs as singles, and so I'm trying to think, I'm like, well, there's got to be at least like two or three that get held back for the album, and I'm trying to, I don't know, I mean, it's tough.
Well, I think, yeah, all right, so it sounds like we're in agreement with obviously the first two that are out there, but the next three, Gorgeous, Endgame, Getaway Car, in some order, maybe this is why we can't have nice things. I'll put out there, yeah, Call It What You Want, Dress, So It Goes, potential if we're going to go that deep.
Well, Gary, we've got to pick every song on the album at this point.
For the next 2.5 years. New Year's Day, what if they ever did put that as a country single? It could work. We're gonna open a country promotion team on my imaginary label.
I'm gonna say Gary's gonna have to keep dreaming on that one. Though of course it will be hot around New Year's Day. I'm sure that'll be. Those streams are gonna spike.
All right, let's get radio's take. Let's go to Eric Bradley, music director, APD of B96 in Chicago. I've been playing some of these songs. Let's get from someone who really knows what they're doing with all this stuff. Eric Bradley on the Billboard Sharpie podcast.
Tilted stage, the role you made me play, the fool, no, I don't like you.
Eric Bradley, APD, music director of B96. We've been talking Taylor. Let's get an official opinion of someone in the business. Overall, Eric, what's your take on Reputation so far?
Well, I mean, my favorite track on the album is the entire album, and that still holds true today. I think that album is loaded, and I'm really hard for me to nail down my favorite song or songs. I think it's exceptional from start to finish. I think it's a pop masterpiece, and as per usual, she delivers the goods.
Now, you know, there's a lot of talk going into it that people, you know, were not feeling the singles out as much, or that they didn't seem to be quite the reflection of the album that people were expecting. Were you surprised by that when you heard the first couple of songs, and then what the album actually ended up being as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, let's be honest, Look What You Made Me Do is probably the most different sounding song she's ever made. And I thought coming with something like that was so left of her normal center was kind of wise. And it clearly didn't disappoint her fans and the people that are intrigued by what she's doing and that love her and that are going out and buying Reputation in droves this week. So I didn't have any problem with that. And I thought Ready For It was right in the pocket of where I thought she would be. And I thought the Instant Grat tracks were equally as great. I loved Gorgeous and Call It What You Want was awesome. And, you know, but I knew the best songs were going to be on the album, and that is true. So.
How did Look What You Made Me Do at radio? We pointed out that it had a pretty big drop from number one on the pop songs chart, on the radio songs chart. It feels like it's not going to be the longest lasting hit, unlike, you know, something like Shake It Off for the first single, which really did turn into a long term hit. Does this one feel like it was more of kind of a quick statement song? She's back. She's addressing some of these pop culture rumor things, and now she's onto something else. Does this one feel a little bit different than some of her more deeper hits?
Yeah, it feels exactly what you just said. I think it was effective for what it needed to do and what it needed to be. And I think it was everything that she needed it to be as far as like the lead single from her new record announcing that she's back and getting the attention and and having the accompanying visual and doing everything that it needed to do effectively to set their reputation and release. I didn't think it was a misstep whatsoever. I felt like it wasn't her biggest hit. It didn't have the longevity that Wildest Dreams or Shake It Off or Style or Blank Space or anything from the last record really had. But for what it needed to do, I felt that it did exactly that.
That's what we keep saying, that she really couldn't have put out a different first single. That kind of had to be the first single, for good or bad. It is kind of polarizing, but it doesn't feel like this could have worked as a third or fourth single. It just feels like this has to be the one to introduce Reputation.
For sure.
Because we, Gary and I, were talking about what we think could be the future pop radio singles, and especially for an album that I think is cohesive as an album, to sort of pick out what you think could be the radio hits. Where do you see, after Ready For It, the album heading?
Obviously, everyone's going to gravitate towards Endgame because of the features. I think that's a logical single at some point. I think, honestly, like the one that I feel like could very well be after that is Delicate. I think Delicate is just a 10. I love that song. But then again, I also love, like, I Did Something Bad. That's the one that when you hear that and you listen to the melody, it gets stuck in your head for hours. Like, I woke up the other mornings with that, like, I could not get that out of my head. And I think Don't Blame Me is a possibility. I think New Year's Day is awesome. Getaway Car is a possibility. I just think there's, like, many, many different routes they can go with what's coming up. And then I should also mention This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things, which I think is a title that just will really connect, and people will feel that. And I think the texture of that song feels kind of like Bad Blood 2018. So,
hey, we were saying the same thing. No mention of Gorgeous. You don't necessarily...
Yeah, we're playing Gorgeous on B96, but I kind of treat that as, like, one of the instant brat tracks, and I just don't know if that'll ever be a single. But I tell you that, as far as how songs sound on the radio, that song sounds like it fits so well on the radio. I really love hearing that on the station when I listen to it. So,
right. Everyone's got an opinion on Taylor, so we had to get yours. Eric.
What's everybody else saying? Everybody else talking pretty good, like saying good stuff, or what?
Yeah, I think people are kind of saying that there's so much talk that she's angry, she's moody now, and we're going to get a whole different Taylor. And Trevor and I were both saying, and other people have said, that you listen to the actual album, it's a Taylor Swift pop album filled with hooks.
Totally agree.
I mean, I'm interested too, because I guess I just wonder that the sound is relatively sort of muted compared to 1989, and I wonder how. I mean, they're obviously like Endgame, obviously, it sort of stands out as one of the bigger tracks, but I'm very curious to see how, you know, we've seen this like a lot of times, I guess, with Rihanna, Beyonce, a lot of people who are making more cohesive albums and start to finish albums, but pulling out those sort of radio ready singles has been a little bit harder, and I'm interested to see if she kind of falls into that same situation or not. You know, she's the exception to a lot of rules, so we'll see.
Real quick, Eric, what else is working on B96 right now for you?
Well, I think our biggest songs are not too surprising. It's Ed's new single, or current single, Perfect, is going all the way. Obviously, Thunder did great. Dua Lipa is coming home now, which is awesome for those of us who have loved her since the first time we heard her. Post Malone's very hot. J Balvin, Mi Gente is going all the way, and we're playing the version currently without Beyonce. We played that version first, and then we put the Beyonce version in, and we went back to the original, for whatever that's worth. Yeah. And last but not least, I would mention Camila Cabello, which I think is probably going to be her first solo number one, and hopefully the first of many more, because she's someone who deserves it just as much.
What do you think of this new Eminem song? Are you talking about Beyonce? Everyone seems
split. Yeah.
Everyone seems split on this song.
A little disappointed for me.
Isn't that the word I use? Disappointment.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people who are good with this song.
I mean, I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. I was looking for more like a, as I say, the 03 Bonnie and Clyde kind of vibe. And
totally. I thought it was going to be more of like a banger. This is a little softer than I thought. But
100%.
You know, hey, I respect, and I hope it goes all the way and goes the distance. I mean, hard to get two bigger names and two bigger stars for sure on a record together. That's a great opportunity. I hope that it goes all the way for them.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the Dua Lipa, too. It feels like that's been a slow build, but we've seen how passionate her fans are. It feels like the song really does have some legs.
Well, and a really big international base that I think, you know, huge in the UK. People have been waiting for that breakthrough. And, of course, you know, the American market is the hardest to break, but it seems like now it's finally coming home for her.
It's breaking. Yeah, I feel like it's totally going, and I'm thrilled for her. She's another just dear person who you want to see succeed and want to see have like a lifelong, long, successful career. I think she's I think the world of her, and I hope that this is like the first of many like real legitimate smashes for her. And I think this really sets the table for what's coming after this.
All right, thank you so much, Eric.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for thinking of me. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Wraps the Taylor portion of this very long podcast. So, Trevor, let's flashback before we go to what?
All right, we're only going to flashback. Hold on to your seatbelt. 24 months.
I thought we had time for a whole long ride. I could get some stuff done, but no, just a quick trip.
We're here already. 2015. Do you still recognize it? All aboard. All right, so this week we're going to focus on Focus. Ariana Grande, which was, yes, I see, exactly. It was only 2 years ago, and it's almost like we're kind of one of the, I shouldn't say an infamous single because it's not sort of that, but an interesting single that we use to kind of highlight a phenomenon we're seeing more and more often. So flashback 24 months ago, two studio albums out. My Everything had been the most recent one. A lot of hits on that. We'd heard Problem from that. We'd heard Break Free. We'd heard Love Me Harder, which was, I think, sort of pop culture's big introduction to The Weeknd.
Right.
So this is like, you know, before The Weeknd really even blew up. And then so we're heading into album cycle number 3. A lot of people, bloggers, fans, all ready for the album, which is supposed to be called Moonlight, to come out. And we get the first single in late 2015 from what we think will be Moonlight. It's a song called Focus. Also, shout out to, if anyone does not know, that is Jamie Foxx helping out with the chorus, sort of, focus on me. That's Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx right there. All right. And so the thing about this song in particular, everyone said, you know, even all of the posts that day, Focus, lead single from her song, you know, debuts at number 7 on the Hot 100. Doesn't have the longest legs of the songs in her career. But something interesting kind of happens in between that October and next spring when we get the album Dangerous Woman, and that is, the album is not called Moonlight, it is called Dangerous Woman, and there is no song called Focus on it, unless you have apparently the Japanese deluxe edition. So what happened?
I don't.
You don't? No one in this room does. So what happened? What happened, Gary?
It didn't work at radio. I remember at the time there being a lot of talk that it was sort of a rewrite of Problem and just wasn't as good.
For sure.
So I think people wanted something a little, probably a little bit different, and something that they hadn't heard before, because especially the singles from the previous album, they all kind of did something different. Break Free was kind of a dance hit. The Weeknd was kind of a sultry duet. They all kind of had different sounds about them, and I think in some ways it was kind of a step back to do something like Focus, and it stopped so quickly at radio that I think the promotion team at Republic knew pretty quickly that this probably isn't the best song to introduce the album with. Let's regroup a little bit.
Yeah, so the song, so Ariana kind of admitted that
that the song was a reed problem, and they probably didn't know what to go with or correct, you know, as the real sound. So they said, okay, this is what we had last time, so this sounds kind of right. Let's put that out there.
Did you say a reed problem? Is that the term?
Did I say reed problem?
I think so.
I don't think I said reed problem.
I thought you said a reed problem.
Oh,
like,
well.
Like a redo. Yeah. Like a remake. Like a problem.
Maybe I did.
It was a reed problem.
A reed problem. So, and then when they retooled the album, if you hear Dangerous Woman, it Focus probably would not have fit very well onto that, in my opinion.
Well, I think what's great about Dangerous Woman that really did become a big hit is it was something we hadn't heard from her before. Just
for
the
sure.
production and obviously lyrically, that did take her forward. So at that point, Focus sort of forgotten. We were onto something different.
Yeah. Now it does. And that brings up what I want to bring up in today's sort of main part of this is what I like to call the pump fake single, as we'll call it that, because you think it's going to be this, here it comes, and oh, it's not. And this is something that we have seen more and more often. And I think in particularly a streaming world, or maybe you don't have to put quite the same resources behind it. You can get a little more instant feedback on how people are feeling it. Flashback as well. In 2015, Ariana Grande was not actually the only person to sort of do this. We found out, took a little while, but we found out Rihanna would also be a major player in this pump fake. 2015, we have three songs that Rihanna puts out. 4 or 5 seconds.
Right.
Kanye West and Paul McCartney, along with Rihanna, collaboration, performing at the Grammys. It is a solid, huge hit. Top 5 on the Hot 100. A little later that year, we get Bitch Better Have My Money. Again, another top 20 hit on the Hot 100. Maybe not a massive radio hit, but certainly a pop culture, you know, phenomenon. The phrase becomes so popular. I remember Ellen does it on Lip Sync Battle with Jimmy Fallon. So another solid, you know, album-worthy cut in the catalog. American Oxygen also that year, not on the same level. I mean, there's really no way around that. Doesn't do nearly as well. Gets put in some NCAA ads, so it kind of gets some of that product placement. And then here we come into January 2016. We get Rihanna's 8th album, which another pump fake. Everyone sort of assumed it would be called R8, I guess, with the car. The album's called Anti. None of those songs make the cut.
Right.
Not one, not two, not three. So I think that was one of those things that people said, wait a minute, like how is this happening? You can fast forward even to this week. This week on the Billboard 200, Maroon 5's album Red Pill Blues debuts at number 2. In the past year, we heard two songs from Maroon 5. Three songs. The third one does make the album cut, but Don't Want to Know with Kendrick Lamar. Top 10 hit on the Hot 100. A number one smash on radio in November 2016. Does not appear on the album.
Right.
Cold by Future. Top 20, 30 hit. Not quite that same level, but again, does not show up anywhere.
A little bit different, though, than a lot different than Focus in terms of these Maroon 5 songs. They were, especially Don't Want to Know, absolute smashes, whereas Focus, it was very clear early on, let's kind of
it did not have legs. But I still think
we're trying to get the definition of pump fake single officially.
We're trying to get a since
you're very clearly trying to make this
well
a,
it's
a term.
See, I mean, I guess, but I mean, you can tell that there was like a concentrated effort behind it. I mean, the video that dropped that same day, and yes, I believe, if you want to believe that only one thing can exist in the pop world at a time, Ariana had the misfortune of timing her single to the same day that Adele came back with Hello.
Oh, right.
So that definitely washed the entire conversation that way. But I think it's something that we've seen a couple more times. Kanye West, I'll throw out one more as well. Only One and All Day in 2015. Neither of those make The Life of Pablo. So, you know, it's one of those things, I guess, in a streaming world.
Exactly.
Do you know, and this kind of brings it into the conversation of album and what their sort of status and relevance is. And nowadays, it's just interesting to me that, you know, so many artists can throw out all these songs, even have them be hits. I mean, you can say Focus wasn't a hit. You know, it was a top 10 on the Hot 100. So there was some anticipation behind it. People were, you know, excited a little bit for it. But then just to say, you know what? No, that's not going to be it at all. I mean, just another one of those hallmarks of the streaming era that kind of is changing the game.
In the past, it would be on the album forever. It would be on there, and you'd kind of have to admit if it was a mistake. But
yeah.
Now you can just scrub it right off.
I mean, the fact that, you know, when I brought up Focus, it was like, oh yeah, that there was a time that Focus existed.
Right.
Or I mean, even some of these Rihanna songs. There was American Oxygen. That's right. I forgot about that. So just kind of one of those fun things that I was looking at when I was trying to figure out what to talk about this week. And when I saw Focus 2, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess we could talk about this and sort of what it did. Not to say that – I don't want to say that Ariana inaugurated this club. It wasn't she wasn't the first person. Certainly there are plenty more anecdotes and examples from even the 80s and 90s of songs that came out in one place and were never on people's albums until maybe a greatest hits, or they never did them on tour. But just for something in a streaming world that makes it that much more accessible, but at the same time sort of that much more able to be hidden.
Yeah, it was sort of interesting too how you go through the singles from Dangerous Woman. That was the first single, good statement song. Into You, I always thought was going to be the absolute biggest hit, sounded like the most obvious hit. It actually didn't hit the top 10. It was a big hit, but it got to number 13 on the Hot 100. And then I was always surprised for a while. I think the more you heard it, sounded like a total smash. But Side to Side, the third single from Dangerous Woman, that got to number 4. That wound up the biggest hit from the album. So you can never know what people are going to wind up connecting with. You can make all the plans ahead of time. It's always going to come down to how does it actually react once it gets out there.
I think that's exactly true. And to spin this one a little forward, I think we're going to see a couple more. There are a couple pump fakes out there right now that I think we will not see on any album track list. And in particular, I'm going to point right now to this week's number 2 song, Havana, Camila Cabello. This is one of her, I think, 3 or 4 songs that come out before this song really caught on, that I don't think Crying in the Club, which she put out in the spring, got to number 47 on the Hot 100. She put out a song, I Have Questions, pretty soon after that, that, you know, I think a lot of people sort of have forgotten about. And when Havana came out, there was actually there was a dual release that day, Havana with Young Thug and OMG with Quavo. Now, Camila's kind of said as much that Havana is sort of a new direction, a new sound, something that she's a little more tied to. I mean, I think Havana will be the start of something new for sure. Whether all the songs have that kind of vibe, but nothing else, I think a little more grown up, a little less down the middle pop.
Right.
You know, maybe a little more influence of R&B and Latin, and maybe even, I mean, trap is obviously in right now. So that one I'll be interested to watch out for. And also in that same kind of pop vein, some of these Selena Gomez songs that have been out this year.
Right.
Be interested to see what happens with those. You know, they've been not the biggest hits in the world, both within the top 20 was Bad Liar, Fetish peaking at the top 30 on the Hot 100. So, I mean, still solid top 40 hits, but, I mean, to follow Revival, which had 3 top 10 hits, I wonder, you know,
I think there'll be
a reset on this project, too.
I feel like they kind of get a little bit of a pass because they were kind of overshadowed by It Ain't Me, which became so huge. You don't think so?
No. You think so?
Yeah, I feel like those are almost bonus songs, whereas It Ain't Me was still going strong. She could kind of slip in a couple other extras, see if they connected.
I mean, I could see that. I mean,
I feel like she's kind of playing with house money a little bit while she's riding so high with It Ain't Me, kind of see if these other slightly experimental. Obviously, Bad Liar was way out there. Fetish is lyrically a little adventurous.
Yeah, I mean, but it does feel like, you know, testing the waters. I mean, Revival came out in 2015, so coming up, 2 years now, maybe 2.5, feels like you kind of warm up for the next album cycle.
I'd be surprised if those songs were on the new album. Feels like it's a reset.
I do, too. And, I mean, I feel like especially something we've seen a lot recently, I mean, the first single's always been important, but it feels like especially now in the streaming world where attention can get so divided so quickly and you can be here and gone, I mean, you got to land with that hit to introduce that album.
And related, although we're kind of going off on a different tangent, but something we've talked about this year, 2 of the absolute record-breaking biggest hits still aren't even on albums. Despacito, not on an album. Sam Hunt, Body Like a Back Road, not on an album. So really, the rules are all just being rewritten about the importance of albums in a streaming world at this point. So
yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, that was really long.
You think this week's was long? So next time, we're going to be back here on the Chartbeat podcast. It's actually not going to post next Thursday like it usually does because next Thursday is Thanksgiving. But the week after, on Tuesday, will be November 28th. If we go back 25 years to November 28th, 1992, a certain classic song went to number 1 that week. So we figured it's time for another flashback retro Hot 100 countdown. So we're going to flashback to the top 40 hits on the Hot 100. November 28th, 1992, a favorite of yours, Trevor.
Yeah, definitely a one of the biggest songs ever recorded, really.
Madonna, TLC, Boys to Men, maybe Whitney Houston is on that countdown.
Gary and his teases. Gary, what's your favorite pump fake song we should close with? Is it Pretty Girls by Britney Spears? Iggy Azalea, that song never ended up on it. Britney Spears did not pick that one up for her album in 2016. Iggy still has yet to put out another album, so maybe it will find a home. But I mean,
you've created this pump pig thing. You've got to own it. You've got to take it all the way. You've got to pick one.
All right. Well, you know, we talked a lot about Rihanna having some pump fakes in her career. We'll talk about another one that involves her, and that's going to be Calvin Harris. This Is What You Came For, which I think a lot of people thought would be, it never was on an album. Smash hit for the summer, only last year. So
taking us back to Taylor, who co-wrote.
Baby, this is what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves. And everybody's watching her, but she's looking at you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.